I often say that addiction is the result of not knowing how to find safety inside of yourself. So you find it in something else, and understandably, you get hooked on it because you're desperate for safety. That's all you're guilty of. Any of you looking to learn more about supporting addiction recovery through a trauma-informed and somatic lens and a nutritional lens, please join me for my addiction circle. This is a bi-monthly, entirely free virtual circle that I invite anyone here to come and join if they want more information. Addiction tends to be so steeped in shame, and I find that doing this work in a community of people helps to destigmatize that shame so you can see how not alone you are in the experience. So whether you are personally withdrawing, preventing, experiencing relapse, or you work with people who are actively addicted or in recovery, all are welcome.
The next Addiction Circle will be held on Tuesday, May 7th at 5 p.m. EDT. This meeting is not recorded for the sake of anonymity. No registration is necessary. Just join through the link below.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast, where we discuss every aspect of life through the lens of somatic psychology, nutrition, and self-inquiry. My name's Luis Mojica, and I'm a somatic educator who teaches people how to find safety inside themselves so they can better navigate this strange and sensational human experience. Your time to learn begins now.
Hi there. This is Evan, the admin assistant here at Holistic Life Navigation. Today's episode is a replay from one of the monthly interviews Luis is doing with Jaguar Mary X on the Midday Medicine Journey Show, hosted by Radio Kingston. Enjoy.
It's Midday Medicine Journey. It's, you know, your Thursday afternoon relaxation time where we honor our moments of rest, our siestas, our tea times, and our dream times. And appropriately, I have a special guest, Luis Mojica, who is here, and I don't know. Of course, you're here.
Am I here? Let's see. Let's check.
I know.
Let me check if I'm here.
I know. Sometimes, you know, I start rolling and on some, you know, I start just kind of spewing words, and then I kind of lose my way.
A little bit. Me too. That's why I'm doing somatic therapy.
Yeah.
I can lose the words, it still works.
Yes. So it was such a pleasure to hear your music at Graveside Variety last weekend. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, congratulations. What a feat, you know, the music, the new music, performing with, you know, some dear friends. Elizabeth Clark was there, who, you know, the harpist and sort of being extraordinaire that that I love so much. And, you know, my experience of being there was, you know, sometimes I felt like a little bit like a fly on the wall. Sometimes I felt a little bit of fear. Sometimes I felt like some resistance actually from like taking in what you were saying. Sometimes I felt like, you know, yeah, life is like, I don't know, this musical journey, you know, one of the most powerful musical journeys ever, because our bodies carry so many resonances. And because through those stories that you were telling, like they were living in you, I could see them kind of coming alive. And I was like, yeah, I remember the East Village, you know, I remember feelings about interacting with, you know, people who don't have homes or have chosen other alternative lifestyles. You know, I'm also a person who's chosen somewhat of an alternative lifestyle, you know, according to what my father would have hoped, you know, wanting to be me to be a doctor or a lawyer, which is like such a weird thing to say to someone, you know.
Just imagining you as a lawyer and enjoying it right now. I'm seeing you with like a Judge Judy wig.
I would definitely be a Judge Judy character. Yes. There's no doubt about it.
I'm beaming in my heart right now listening to how you experienced it, because that was my hope. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been performing for over a decade, my music. And every time I would perform a concert or a show, I would have this, what's the quality? I would have a disconnected feeling afterwards. I didn't feel like I connected to the audience. And then in 2019, I was gearing up for my biggest tour yet. We had a whole national tour set for 2020, which got derailed by the pandemic. Mm. I'm really glad it got derailed, because that's what propelled me into somatics on a public level. I was already doing private one-on-one. I didn't really have a big website. I barely use social media. I might have posted twice a year or something. But I started getting much more public, virtually first and then in person. And these last 4 years have been my teacher of how do I sit in front of people without poetry, without the mythology that comes with being a musician. You know, like the way you shroud your music in mystery so no one really knows what you're talking about. I had to completely throw that out to teach trauma healing to groups. I had to be really direct and really explicit and really naked without, you know, the color of music. So I'm so grateful for that, because when I decided to do this show, I had made the decision I never wanted to perform in a bar again. And when you're a musician, especially when you're starting out, you don't have a label, you're doing it yourself, you don't get theaters, you know, mm-hmm. You get clubs usually. Sometimes you get really lucky, but you usually have clubs. And the stage is anywhere 20 to 200 feet from a bar. So you're really playing to people who are there to drink together. And you're kind of background music, and sometimes a song breaks through. And all my songs are so incredibly intimate that it's just not the right venue for me. But that was all I had. And so I told myself, I'm never playing again until I can be in a space that's intimate and there's no bar and people are really kind of invested in hearing and feeling. And so these last 4 years, you know, I've unearthed a beautiful following of people who love this work as much as I do. So they trust me, they know my story, they're interested in sharing space with me. And that made it even more special, because we've been weaving in this one way for a while. And now it was an hour and 20 minutes just focused on me and my stories, which I haven't done in so long. So it was really a breakthrough for me to weave my story with my body, with your body, and then play a song without any clanking of Coors Light bottles.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I happen to sit next to someone who's been practicing with you. I can't remember her name, but she had never seen you perform. And she was just absolutely delighted to be able to be there to share the experience. Mm. And since, you know, within the community of somatic healing work that you do, there is already a knowing of the tenderness and the vulnerability and the openness that is going to take place. You know, for her, I think she was, you know, I got the sense that she was so excited to participate and be a witness.
Mm.
Yeah.
That feels good to hear mm-hmm. in my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I titled it My Broken Body is a Medicine Box, because it was almost the behind the scenes to how I do my therapy practice.
Right.
You know, because people that really follow my work, they know my story. People who don't just see me as a kind, empathic person that teaches this, but they don't really understand how I can understand so many sideways alleys, because I present one way, but mm-hmm. you don't know my history.
Yeah.
So it was really satisfying to unroll some of my deepest historical moments that have, you know, were so painful, but created this deep well of medicine.
Right. And, you know, through the storytelling and your music and your actual presence, your physical presence in the space, there is a tremendous amount of healing that people can sort of be open to without sort of being, you know, sort of banged on the head or like shaken or like, you know, yelled at to pay attention to something, or, you know, it's the art and the commitment to the art and the commitment to honesty, really.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
That helps people to enter, I think. You know,
I like that you said that, because that's the vulnerability for me as the performer, is they enter my experience. And I was being vulnerable for years, but no one was entering because the venue wasn't appropriate, or the way I held it wasn't appropriate. I would rush through my sets because it felt very just exposed without the delight of being entered in a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. But Evie had walked up to me at the end. And I was really, really touched by their words around, and Evie just kept saying, "Thank you so much for sharing yourself. Thank you so much for sharing yourself." I thought, that's so nice that for them, the gift was my share, just the sharing.
Yeah.
And it did that thing where it said, you know, as you are, the more honest you are, the more lovable you are. It's not like you have to be anything big. It's not about your music. It's not about how you look. It's just your sharing. And that felt so human and beautiful.
Yeah. I will also offer that the resistance that I felt, some of the tension really that I felt in my chest came up with the mirror story and the accompanying song. I don't know if many people have said that to you.
So many.
Yeah. For me, it really has to do with being non-binary, trans, and, you know, always sort of looking and accepting, but almost also simultaneously not being thoroughly satisfied.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what that song's all about. Mm-hmm, that was my whole life story.
Yeah.
I wondered about that because I saw a lot of people came up, and when they hugged me, they whispered into my ear about that song in particular and that story, and tears flowed. And it's like we all have this, a lot of us have this sordid history with mirrors in our bodies and what we're seeing. And more and more I see trans and body shame and dysmorphia and all these different pieces as just really spiritual experiences of the spirit being like, am I really just this? You know, I feel like more and more in our human mind are trying to figure out like what the form should look like or what we're going to call the form. But it's really almost confronted with the limit of a body compared to the ambiguity of spirit, you know? That's how I feel it in my body when I look at myself.
Yeah.
That's helped. That's become a balm for me.
That does sound helpful. On the other side too, I had a spiritual teacher when I was living in Sedona, Arizona, who was, you know, very, black woman from Chicago, just like very different in the way that they thought about this earth realm and its history. Mm-hmm. And she would tell me stories about like earthly existences where we could change our shape. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the ability to change our shape. And now, you know, people change their shape to working out and, you know, eating or whatever it is. I mean, that is a kind of shape-shifting experience, or clothing or whatever it is, makeup. But at the same time, I feel that sense of loss.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was speaking to one of my friends about this 3 months ago on the phone. Mm-hmm. She's in the West Coast. Her name's Amber McSeal. She has this entire work and practice called Decolonizing the Psyche. It's incredible. If anyone wants to look it up, decolonizingthepsyche.com. And we were talking about how shape-shifting has gotten very commercialized, and you just spoke to it. You know, identity is one way companies take advantage of it. Makeup, clothing, weight loss, you know, even alcohol and certain drugs, you know, they change the shape based on your brain chemistry and how you perceive yourself. None of these are good or bad. However, what you're speaking to is so dear to my heart, because it's the shape shifting that comes from merging with other beings. You know, it's the world of animism where I look at a tree. Mm-hmm. I become a tree.
Yeah.
No company has to pay. I don't have to pay a company to get that. That is like a direct access to a spiritual experience. And we all come from that in our different lineages. So I think there's that urge.
Yeah.
Like you said, loss. There's that urge that comes from the loss that propels us to be consumers, when really it's as simple as, if I just sit long enough with my hands on this table, I will fucking become this table. Oh God, I did it again. I can't believe it. How do I keep getting invited back? Okay, I'm going to do that again. Put my hands on this table.
There's no F word that would keep you away from coming on this show. Let me just tell you that.
Okay, that's my Valentine card for the month. No, but if I feel this table, it's like, oh my gosh, I feel through my belly, I feel the flatness of the grain, and I feel the tree, and I feel the terror of it being cut. And it's like, I'm shape-shifting right now.
Yeah, yeah.
No one can take that from me.
Yeah, yeah. That's real. I really love that because when I think about, well, specifically my interactions with trees, they've always been so, so deeply communicative.
Yes.
And so, you know, I was in Ireland and I had this amazing experience with this huge oak. I mean, it was F word huge. And I danced for it, you know, like I went there and I just started dancing.
For
and
moving. It. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How did they respond to your dancing?
Well, I mean, I danced and then I hugged and I was like, you know, and I thanked, offered gratitude. And then I went on my way down the trail. We went down to a waterfall. Then on the way coming back, and I had never been on this trail before, so I wasn't super familiar with it, but I had this sense of looking around and I stopped and then I looked and there was the tree right there. So I kind of stopped at the same location, the same tree. It was kind of, you know, I imagined the communication being like, hi again.
Hey there, I remember you.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I just kind of looked at the tree root and looked up and then a drop of water hit my third eye.
Oh, I love that.
And I was like, oh, thank you for that gift.
Mm. Yeah, it's like a little drop of kiss right
there. Yeah, exactly.
do we have time for a short tree story?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Do you remember in Washington Square Park, the northeast corner of the park, there was this really big pulpy locust tree? I don't know if you ever saw this one.
Yeah, I don't remember. No.
Really special creature. Mm-hmm. So I would go and sit across from this locust tree every single day. And I don't know who it was, but someone local to the area would just put dozens of pounds of peanuts all over this tree. And every squirrel was on this tree. And people would walk and you could tell the tree people from the whatever other people.
Yeah.
Because they would walk and they would stop and they would just gawk and some would touch. Someone kiss, someone laugh, someone take pictures. But this tree helped me a lot with my body hatred because early on when I was 13, that was one of my first moments of clarity when I went out in nature and I saw all these ambiguous forms that my body took on in the trees. And that was one of the first moments, you know, Anoni talks about this in her work of, I am natural. I am of the earth. I'm not extraterrestrial. Mm. Or maybe I am, but I'm very organic here.
Yep.
And that was my first. And then that pulpy locust tree in the northeast corner of the Washington Square Park, I was thinking, if everyone could admire this creature and like kiss it and take pictures of it, what's wrong with this creature? My breast and my hips and... I had cystic acne growing up, so these big volcanic explosions for my skin. And it just really helped to feel so much more natural, you know, versus other. They since cut the tree down. That was a grief for me when I walked by one day and saw that it was no longer there. But anyone here that remembers, that was a special friend.
Yeah. Trees, you know, I think about some of the shapes that I've been noticing more, looking at trees, you know, and thinking about how they can take on these, what might be considered like absolutely grotesque forms.
That's it.
Absolutely grotesque forms. And they're so beautiful.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I had been obsessed with elephantiasis when I met this tree. Mm. And that was what I got. I was like, this tree is the tree form of elephantiasis. In human form, this is something, again, that is labeled as like grotesque or a problem. In tree form, it's like the most beautiful thing we ever saw. You know, something can shift for the human form too. So I love that you said that.
Yeah.
That's it. I love our conversations.
I know.
I'm like, oh, we're going to talk about this and this, and then we just go down this other gorgeous world.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're here. It's been a few months, actually.
I know. Yeah, I missed the last one because we were in the middle of moving or something happened.
Yeah,
it's really nice to be here.
So good. For folks who are listening, I'm speaking with Luis Mojica, somatic coach and so many other things, musician, just a brilliant and beautiful being. It's Midday Medicine Journey. I'm Jaguar Mary X here on Radio Kingston. I've got some announcements from our community, and then we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Susie Miranda. I'm the program manager at Place Corps.
And I'm Isabella Harrell, a Place Corps fellow.
Do you have an adventurous spirit? Are you 18 to 21?
Place Corps is a 9-month exploratory gap year fellowship for young people in the Hudson Valley. It's an alternative to college where you spend the year discovering your interests by being immersed in community, art studios, farms, kitchens, workshops, and much more.
Place Corps is a launching pad for curious young people who are looking to build a brighter future. We offer $9,000 learning grants and help connect you to jobs, internships, and further learning opportunities.
If you're an explorer looking to find your place in the world, join Place Corps.
To get more information or to apply, go to placecorps.org.
Hey, it's DJ Mr. Chips. Join me for Dollar Bin Radio, Thursday nights from 10 to midnight. No holds barred, whatever it be. Jazz, funk, blues, or R&B. I'll take it all. And just for example, I picked up Eddie James just for the sample.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
I'm digging in deep for songs of the past. Fucking all trends, cause no trends last. So call up your mother, your brother, your friend. Record after record, see the fun never ends. Sometimes an A side, another the flip. I'm the good time DJ and host Mr. Chips. Thrift store finds, I'll make you wanna holler.
This is a dog, it's a dog, it's a dog.
Everything's cool if you follow one rule.
As long as it plays without skips, that's cool.
That's Dollar Bin Radio, Thursday nights from 10 to midnight, here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, and anytime on RadioKingston.org.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Midday Medicine Journey here on Radio Kingston with me, Jaguar Mary X. I'm on every Thursday between 1 and 3 p.m. I play music from all over the world. It's kind of vibey, a little bit of ambient, definitely kind of like on the uplift, deeply felt, lots of music that inspires my heart. I'm here in the studio with Luis Mojica. We've been talking about their recent performance at Graveside Variety, and you have you're going to record an album. I mean, mm-hmm. or you're going to, yeah.
Yeah, actually, we already started recording it, and now we're getting into the, we need to get the guest musicians and then go into all the mixing and such.
Ooh.
But this one's going to have a really dreamy music video land.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
If you need volunteers to be in it, I want to be
Oh, don't worry. I've already been dreaming about you. Okay. I've been dreaming about you and Evie Oddly, actually.
Oh, really?
Do you know Evie Oddly?
No.
Oh, really?
I thought you were talking about Evie.
You're Evie.
Oddly.
Oh, my God. Evie Oddly is one of my favorite drag queens. And her costumes are like so beyond the human realm, like other than human. And I'm like, I want to find a way to retain her. So I actually want to do a music video for Mirror mm-hmm. with Evie Oddly mm-hmm. and with other people that have a resonance with that story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I have this whole incredible realm I want to create. So we're gonna see when the time comes.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
But I'll let you know for
okay.
sure.
Cool. One of the other things that I've been thinking about, partly because of what's going on in the world and partly because some things are shifting for me here at the station, I'm considering and probably will enter into a phase where I'm going to be doing early morning radio, like 2 to 5 a.m. And I've been sort of experimenting with it in the last few days, and I've always wanted to do it. But I'm looking at my motivations. Mm-hmm. So one of the motivations is it's a fun experiment. You know, it's a type of hour. It's a, you know, a period of time that is filled with magic for me. Mm-hmm. And I just want to play in there. And also, it will increase my abundance, you know, exponentially because I'll be here more.
Yeah.
And so that connected to, you know, thinking about why people do horrible things to other people, has been making me think about greed. Mm-hmm. And also not just greed, but also lack, you know, mm-hmm, which is kind of like, you know, the seesaw, you know.
Can't agree without lack.
Yeah. So I question myself, you know, about like what I actually need. What are my actual needs? Mm-hmm. What are my intentions, you know? And is all of that in alignment with who I am as a human being? And I think about what I'm witnessing in the world right now, and I'm wondering, how do people justify some things, their actions? Like, where are they finding alignment? Are they finding alignment? Like, what is this, you know, as consumers, we're kind of conditioned into deep lack.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's such a, it's an entity in and of itself, this greed thing. And it seems to really take over. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm wondering somatically what you see is actually, what is actually happening like under the surface. We have these actions out in the world, but under the surface, how is that explained or discussed somatically?
Oh my gosh, so much. I wanted to highlight when you said lack, because especially when you said, you know, we've been conditioned to have this sensation. Even when I think of conditioning, I really think of like a somatic curse. You know, when you grow up with ideas on the news, ideas in certain circles, things you watch on TV, other people's belief systems, it does something to your posture. So there's a posture of lack. What's fascinating about a posture of lack or a somatic sense of not enough in the body, that has a very real origin in your ancestry, right? Every single body on this planet, some will have are little, only maybe one or two generations were removed or in their own lifetime. Others might be like 8 generations removed. But these animal bodies, they know that lack once was a very real thing. And in nature, lack is the guarantee. You know, when I watch squirrels, we're seeing what we call greed in the human form. We're seeing this inability to attune to what you have. And I remember reading that squirrels are responsible for something like 1,000 trees every year because they're so hyper aroused at finding and hiding from other squirrels that they forget where they put them.
Like hiding nuts.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
And so they hide, maybe they hide like 800 acorns. I only remember where 500 are. So, do you want to go somewhere?
I love a squirrel. I mean, I love a squirrel. That's like, you know, the hoarder, you know?
That's what it is. So when I see a greedy person or I see a greedy entity or a greedy corporation or a country or government, whatever it is, that's what I see. I see a squirrel nervous system. I see someone who something happened in their life that, think about epigenetics. Are you familiar with that problem?
Yeah.
So for people that aren't, epigenetics is when a certain food or a certain environment or a smell or a song or a spiritual experience unlocks a new genetic expression. So it's this inner shape-shifting, really. The same thing happens with trauma response. If something happens in my life that unlocks the ancestral memory of lack, then I have the potential to go into dominance and greed and manipulation, even abuse. That's what's so humbling. We all have the potential, the seed, the mm-hmm, acorn, mm-hmm. the forgotten acorn of abuse and dominance lives in every body. And that's why I love somatics, because you can feel when it lights up, you can feel the fear of not enough and how far you're willing to go to get enough.
Yeah.
So I'll pause there and see where that lands for you.
Well, I'm actually feeling, you know, I often feel affirmed when we're talking about stuff, in the sense that what you're saying makes complete sense and has resonated in my mind in other spaces. I also just have this like, I wonder about, I love the fact that we all can be all the things.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to you before about this Buddhist concept of mutual possession of the 10 worlds and, you know, the lowest world being anger, the highest being enlightenment, and even the Buddha can actually inhabit the quote unquote enlightened being can inhabit all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, so I feel like I'm wondering about a disconnect in myself because I often don't remember that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that as true.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like when you don't remember it? What happens for you?
It could be kind of like a spiraling down into just like becoming a puddle, you know, just kind of, you know, laying out on the bed or just being like disinterested in so many, in everything, you know? It's those moments when I feel such a huge sense of despair. Yeah. Really, that's what it is.
That's right. That's right. You know, there's a trauma response that falls under called collapse. And it's when the body takes all of its agency and energy, which would make you move and laugh and run and even cry. And it pulls it so deeply inside that it's almost like you become inanimate. It's almost like the puppeteer, the goddess moving you, just drops your strings and your body just gets limp. And it's an invention of the body to play dead. So you can appear lifeless. So a predator loses interest in you. When they turn their back, then you suddenly run. But when you said despair, that's what it is for me too. If I forget that in me, I suddenly feel overwhelmed by others' greed, horror, abuse, injustice, all those things. Rather than, and this might sound weird, rather than see it as a familiar part of me, it doesn't make it okay. But when I see someone's abuse or greed and I know that part in me, I don't fear it as much. And I have all this capacity to witness it and learn from it and either kind of directly work with them if they're open to shift it, or work with me in my world to make sure we don't go there.
Yeah.
And then it becomes agency instead of collapse.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you were talking earlier about empathy, you know, around seeing this both in yourself and in other folks. And one of the thoughts I had was like calling up that empathy is about, I'm just asking this for clarity. So calling up that empathy is about recognizing those things in you. And at the same time, I'm just like, well, if I know those things are in me, there's also degrees that they're present in me.
That's right.
And sometimes I can fall into comparing the degree of greed I have in myself to the degree of greed that someone else has, that I'm judging that because I'm just like, your greed isn't like my greed. You're hurting people too much. I'm just hurting myself.
My greed's better than your greed.
Yeah.
You're spot on. So what's fascinating about that, when you bring up the empathy, and I'm glad you did, empathy for me always comes from humanizing, right? The moment I dehumanize, that's when I go into those trauma responses of, I mean, greed, of anger, of hate, of collapse, you know, overwhelm, all these things. Because I've dehumanized. I mean, I don't think we realize how scary it is for us to dehumanize somebody. We've literally, in our minds and bodies, removed them from the realm of being human. So in a way, we've given them huge, enormous amount of power because we think they're beyond human. That's scary for the human body, and it completely rejects them from our human tribe. So this is radical humanizing for me, is when I see someone doing the most, I mean, I will have a practice where I go to the most atrocious thing someone can do or is doing, like if it's happening in the world in real time. And I look in my heart for, why would I do that too if I was them? And it brings me into such, sometimes it's even like erotic. It's like such a deep love in my heart toward their heart that it's almost like their war becomes silent in my body.
From our studio in Midtown, this is Radio Kingston, WKNY.
AJ Williams Myers, African Women's Center, and Radio Kingston celebrates Black History Month.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Ariel.
All right. I don't know how that got activated.
Kind of love how that happened, right?
I know.
I thought you were just
wow. Really yeah, cool. No, nothing. I haven't touched anything. Somehow something sort of got, that's okay.
Like when someone's violence in the world becomes like a piece in my heart, mm-hmm. that to me, that's the greatest form of power I wield, is I've transmuted that into a silence in me and a peace that then I take to the next person I meet.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, the empathy comes through extreme relating. Like, how is that a version of me? How could I become that too?
Right.
And then
right.
we're connected.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't create inaction. People hear that and think that means I just allow people to hurt me. Or I think it's okay to hurt other people. No, I don't think it's okay. I understand it. I mm-hmm. don't think it's okay. There's a mm-hmm. huge difference.
Right, right. I'm going to share an experience Please. That I had recently. Or maybe I'll just say a person had this experience. No, it was me. I had the experience.
Okay, tell us about this person, okay. this unnamed person.
I guess I'm feeling vulnerable at the moment, but I, there was a moment in time and I hadn't done this before and I did it for the first time, LSD. And I, you know, there's like this sort of like light, happy, ha ha ha, you know, look at, you know, the world is like, looks different, feels different, the body feels different, blah, blah, blah. And then I went into, I can only describe it as a dark night of the soul. Mm. And it was specifically about feeling the agony of actually being in a war zone. Mm. So mm-hmm. It was so intense and so like, I can't even really describe. I don't even know if there's a kind of a word to describe the emotion, because sad isn't really it. I'm okay with sadness. I'm okay with this particular experience because it showed me so much actually, but it was like my whole like emotional heart was being ripped apart, like torn asunder. And I wasn't actually experiencing it, but I was imagining someone else experiencing it.
Yeah.
So it brought me in a kind of relation.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. But it kind of didn't answer any questions for me in terms of like, because what I go to in my mind is that I want resolution.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I don't want there to be suffering in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I hear you say that, it takes me to so many places in my body, and I hear this term coming up, which again, that always sounds crazy, but I'm just going to go with it. Mm-hmm. Like the privilege of knowing what it's like to be the abuser. And it's a real privilege to not actually be abusive, but to know what it's like to be abusive. Mm-hmm. Because two places came to me when you're telling me that experience. One was fifth grade on the bus. And there was this girl that was known for having a very big nose and got me fun of all the time for it in school. And all these boys are making fun of her on the bus. And these are the same boys that completely terrorized me. And it was my in. It was my moment to be like them. And I joined and I made fun of her on the bus. It's my only memory of actually bullying somebody. And I remember, even as I say it, I feel like so much emotion. Because I remember feeling tortured while doing it, because I felt for her. I felt her pain that I was causing her in that moment. And I remember the dopamine, the high of being accepted, of belonging somewhere, and of feeling like enough. And that high of belonging was enough to help me bypass my empathy in that moment. And that was, you know, you can't do things that hurt people without being out of your body.
Right.
And a couple years ago, I had a very lucid dream. There's alcoholism that has run through my family. And I had a dream of being a certain person completely intoxicated and doing the most vicious things to my family. And I woke from that dream and it took me months to integrate it, but I felt the disorientation of alcoholism and the avalanche of trauma that propelled me to the alcohol because it was the only thing that numbed it. And in the numb state, I did unthinkable atrocities to people. And these two situations, me in real life in fifth grade, and then that dream a few years ago, one of many, you know, instances in my life of, I know what it's like to be abusive. I know what it's like to wield power over. And that's all abuse is something, power I have, I wield over you instead of with you. And it came from a really disoriented, dissociated place. Otherwise, because even when I talk about it now, I feel my stomach and heart doing this and almost like pulling me back out of the bus. Mm. And that's what happens when you're in your body. Your body won't let you hurt something. It won't, unless it's absolute survival in that moment, which is a whole other story, you know, fight response. Mm-hmm. You don't want to hurt for the sake of dominating. It doesn't feel good for you. So you have to be somewhat disoriented from your senses to do that.
Yeah.
So when you said resolution, I think that's an important piece. It's like, what does resolution even look like for the warlord? You know, can a warlord and all the people surrounding him go into their shared ancestral grief that's never been dealt with? That's resolution on one hand of war. Are they going to consent to that? Is forcing them to do that me dominating them? It's so complex.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Luis Mojica here on Midday Medicine Journey. It's Radio Kingston, WKNY, 1490 AM and 107.9 FM here in Kingston, New York. Yeah, I feel like I have to take a deep breath there because part of me, you know, I got pulled out of it. I was, you know, reminded of where I was, where I actually was, my physical body. And in retrospect, I was like, what if I had gone deeper? You know, what would have shifted in me? What would I have learned? How would I have been able to become more compassionate in my, you know, waking world if I let myself, just kind of finish the process of feeling that deeply?
Yeah.
Because I'm always talking about accessing deep feelings. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not a somatic coach or anything, but, you know, like I am familiar.
Oh, but you are. Oh, but you are. You are. Trust me. You are.
Thanks, Luis, for saying that. You know, my teacher is also very much about moving the body to release emotions, moving and vocalizing and, you know, this very sort of primal stuff to get it moving, get it out of the system. And then, you know, the work of actually locating where that energy is being held, which is part of the somatic practice. I just really have a feeling that if I'd gone deeper, then I may have been able to take myself somewhere else. I'm curious about it, really.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
I feel that. I'm just like feeling into that with you. Yeah, it was just when you said primal, I was just realizing that. I think it's important to remember that greed is actually quite primal. It seems the other way around. You know, we talk about greed a lot as like a societal invention. It's very primal. Not being greedy is a conscious experience. It's when that conscious energy is parenting, loving, guiding the primal energy. And so, you know, when I think of primal, I think of this kind of unapologetic, raw, even violent life force that just wants to live no matter what. And sometimes primal is as beautiful as moaning and singing and stretching. And other times it's complete brutality. And it's the conscious mind is what helps it not become brutal, you know, especially unnecessary brutality. And so I just think it's interesting to sit with of the potential for greed lives in us because it's ancient. It's not newly created because of society.
Right. And so I think about this word brutality too, because brutality exists, you know, it's part of our experience. It's not going away.
Nope.
And so navigating the truth of whatever however brutality shows up in my own life is maybe part of the mirror experience as well.
Tell me more about that.
Well, actually, after I went to see your show, there were certain, there are different, the mirror has been coming up, you know. So there was your performance in that particular song. There was also some other sort of mirror work people coming forward into my realm. I was becoming more aware. So I started, I've been looking at my face, you know, looking at myself in the mirror more. And, you know, just sort of really curious about, and after having that really horrifying, dark night of the soul or moment of the soul, I'm curious about where all these like ugly things live in me.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about what they are and how they come out.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's why I say they're forgotten seeds, because these bodies are filled, you know, we call it DNA, we call it genes. They're just dormant seeds, and under the right condition, they'll grow. And if you don't have a relationship to body, which again, interestingly enough, in the modern day is a privilege, you know, in ancient day, it was just the way it was. Mm-hmm. But now it's a privilege to learn you can relate to your body. If you don't have that privilege of knowing that, you don't know when it's growing. You're so identified with it that it just takes over. So you have all these bodies with the potential to be brutal, hatred, love, exciting, angry, you know, all these potentials with zero knowledge of how to relate to that plant when it starts growing, how to feel like the subtlety of when it sprouts through your delicate soil. You don't know it's there until it's a giant forest and you have no control over it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then it's impacting other people. So again, it sounds so Pollyanna sometimes, but when I see these people or anyone being really brutal or really dominating, I actually see an underprivileged person, not in the way we'd think, right? But in the way of connection to self. Like they're so disconnected from self that they become possessed. Like you were saying earlier with me, like they're possessed by the entity of anger or greed or hatred, or, you know, whatever it is. That's not a happy, loving, powerful person. That's someone that has no clue how to be with themselves. And something else has taken them over.
Yeah.
And that just changes the way I experience the whole planet.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of my my kind of seeking and feeling and, you know, just kind of like palpating the space and the potential, there are parts of me that wish that everyone was interested in learning more, connecting with their bodies and healing. And however, I think maybe deeply people are want to be healed. They want to feel a deep love. They want to feel a deep connection. Everyone wants to feel that. That's part of the human experience too. Mm-hmm. And so when I witness someone who appears, you know, just in that moment, to be committed to not doing that kind of investigation or isn't ready or just doesn't really know it's even a possibility, you know, then I can, sometimes I can feel compassion and sometimes I can feel incredible disappointment.
Understandably.
Yeah.
And what does that disappointment grow in you? You know, where does just, because disappointment can turn to, you know, many different roads.
Like what?
Well, I think of myself. Mm-hmm. I think what happens when I'm disappointed, I was just talking about this the other day, so the somatics of disappointment. And I was using the phrase, when things don't go my way. So if I want you to have an enlightened experience with your body and you're just like not going to have it and I'm disappointed, what I wanted was met with the reality of what you wanted, right? So in that is an invitation for me to become the oppressor.
Right.
I can then force that upon you. I can shame you. I can cancel you. I can talk about you to other people. I can begin the campaign of dehumanizing you because my disappointment of things didn't go the way I wanted them to go, somatically, I get disoriented because I had this road, this direction I was going, and then it all just collapsed. Now I'm dizzy. So I am now looking to you to still me and center me by doing what you don't want to do. That's a form of oppression and dominance. So my disappointment within seconds can make me extremely violent and forceful and controlling, or it can make me so vulnerable. I can feel the grief of what I thought it would mean for you and I. I can feel the grief from my culture and my world. You know, there's so many things I can let my heart break. There's a man named Stephen Jenkinson. I just adore his work. And he calls heartbreak a skill. And it really is, because it breaks open, it gets bigger, and this like river of sensation moves through you. That's a deep initiation to feel that level of disappointment without projecting it onto somebody else. Mm-hmm. So again, it's like in that just one-on-one scenario you're bringing in, we're looking at the blueprint of war. You know, do I go to war with you for your own good? That's what war is. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or do I just fall in my own grief and not make it about you? Mm-hmm. Who knows what that could transmute? It's a mystery.
Yeah. Grief, I get that grief is so, this is an odd word, but it can be so soothing.
So that's exactly my experience of grief.
Yeah.
Love that you called it soothing.
Yeah.
Tell me how you feel soothed when you're not resisting it, but when you're in it. Do you notice?
I feel like there is a truth in it, and that is what comforts me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there, and the ability to even feel grief and sadness is like a kind of a beautiful, like, depth of feeling that I absolutely love.
Oh, I love that you're saying that, yeah. I'm going right to my grandfather's in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when I'm saying it's a privilege now to be able to connect to the body, I just realized they had no way of being with their grief. Like they were literally beaten if they felt things. Mm-hmm. It wasn't safe. They
mm-hmm.
learned.
Mm-hmm.
So what you just said, like the ability to feel that depth, that's to me the skill of heartbreak. It's a skill to be with that depth. It's a new thing.
Yeah.
We're lucky we're born when we are. We're learning. It's now becoming subculture still, but there's
mm-hmm.
a culture
mm-hmm.
growing of let's feel these things together. That's never happened in the last several hundred years,
yeah.
Especially in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, soothing. Absolutely.
Mm.
Decadent even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Always so incredibly, like, you know, I love the paths that we take when we talk. And I'm happy that you're so excited to share with people, you know, your life and practice. So I appreciate that. Yeah.
You too. You know, I love that you brought in your new gig and how it made you consider your own greed or your own experiences, and you bring that in here. Just when you said that the truth of grief is soothing, your honesty and where you are soothes me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I feel so decadent and soothing to sit with you too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to be out on the green aisle in part of March. Yeah. So I think we don't come together again until April, actually.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, yeah. But folks can definitely connect with Luis and Luis's work at holisticlifenavigation.com. And I will put that in the archive too, so that people can go there.
I mean, we just served a buffet. So y'all can eat for the next 2 months. We'll see you in April.
I'm all about it. I'm all about the buffet.
Me too.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Luis.
Thanks, love. So that's the end of today's episode. Notice where you feel the episode inside of your body. Those sensations, those expressions. That's how your body speaks to you. Sit with it. Be with it. And let whatever wants to come up, come up. Because all the wisdom you're looking for is right there in those sensations. If you want to go deeper into these practices or find more information about my work, please visit holisticlifenavigation.com. I'll see you next time. Hey everybody, it is time. It is time to hop on a plane, a train, a boat, a goat, a bike, a car, and find your way upstate New York to a little town outside of Phoenicia. I don't know what the town's called actually, but the place that we're going to be in is called Menla, and it is a gorgeous, epic retreat center in the middle of the forest in the Catskill Mountains with a spa and organic vegetarian food with lots of beans and yoga in the morning and a swimming pool and a swimming hole and trails. And yes, it is an HLN retreat. It is a 5-day retreat from Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. It is the biggest retreat we've ever put on, and the entire team is going to be there. They are all flying from different corners of the country to come together to hold you in the healing magic that is somatics. We will be teaching you how to belong without having to fit in, how to find safety inside of yourself and share that with others, how to receive witnessing, how to feel for your boundaries instead of fawning. We are going to cover so much, and you're going to be doing it in the most ideal setting of being fed, of being loved, of resting, of enjoying the forest and nature, and being with us and 60 other bodies. So please go to the website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on events, and you'll find it there. Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. All the info as well can be found directly through the link in this episode details. I am just so thrilled for this, and I can't wait to see some of you in person.